Well, yes. I mean, but wow. I don't know if I need to say anything to that. Captain's Pod, Stardate 12-22-34.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of cinema sins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she's a fool! She could have been recording this whole time! It's Ambassador Danae. It just works so well.
Everything works so well, since I am a chaos monster.
Yeah. I do love, like, the in TOS, the rare explosions of emotion that you get from Spock, because whenever Spock is emotional in Strange New Worlds, people are like, oh, that's not Spock, he doesn't get emotional. I'm like, are you kidding? He berated himself for not hitting record on the tricorder.
He was like, really upset with himself.
Idiot! Yeah. He was super mad.
Yeah. I mean, I assume we've all had that moment in our lives where we're like, what was I thinking? Why didn't I do that?
I think we all know somebody that, like, recording, like, your child's first steps or something, and they hadn't hit the record button. Like, I think everybody knows somebody that has a crucial life moment that was never recorded.
Or they deleted it.
You just gotta live with that. Like, the humans are dumb. We do dumb stuff.
Yeah, we sure do. And that's why you're here, podcast listeners, to hear Ian and I do dumb stuff.
Do dumb stuff. This is my favorite dumb thing that I do every week, though.
Dumb!
Dumb! Ten of these things! Okay, we got a lot to get into. We have, like, a preface to do for an episode that leads into this episode.
Jesus.
We have two emails to get through. A contact lens just tried to eject itself from my eyeball. Well, I fixed that. Let's do some emails.
Emails!
Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. To this week, we have a lovely email from Captain Matt, the USS Nova, NCC 73515.
Oh my god, we have an actual captain?
A fellow captain.
Oh my god, I love it.
Messaged me. Interception from another... what's the word?
Whoa.
Transmission from another ship. Matt says some lovely things about the podcast. Absolutely loving the podcast. Been a closet fan, Star Trek fan for the past 10 years. And only just been rewatching all of the greats, starting from Enterprise.
I thought he was going to say he was a closet fan of our show. And I'm like, no.
I would love it that we've only been around for 3 years and we have, like, closet fans. They're just like, I'm too shy.
I feel
it's
like
totally in keeping.
Like, wow, we've arrived with a closet fan.
Yeah, we have people that are embarrassed to like us.
Oh my
That's
God.
Amazing. That's great. Your show has been the perfect companion to my commute home, household chores, and while I'm at work. Thank you, Matt. That's amazing.
Are we a safe thing to listen to while at work?
Well, he does say he regrets sometimes listening when I screw up pronunciations and a giggle escapes at work. And then, like, we've all done that. You listen to something at work if you're in a public space or something. And for some reason, laughing out of nowhere gets a lot of stares from people.
Yeah. And then it's like, if you're a closet Star Trek fan, you don't really want to say what you're listening to. Plus,
yeah, you don't want to expose
yourself.
Even if
you aren't a Star Trek fan, maybe you don't want to admit that you're listening to this podcast, so then you have to just make something up, like, oh, I just thought of a joke that I
that's the best, isn't it? Like, what are you listening to? Star Trek podcast? Oh, you like Star Trek? I haven't seen a single episode.
Nope. And we do have people that do that. Listen to the show who don't watch Star Trek?
I think at this point they've all seen at least one episode of Star Trek.
Let us know if
I
we're
would
wrong.
Wager
tell us if we're
yeah,
wrong
please do.
I'm really curious. Okay, go on.
Check out the outtakes for the multiple email addresses you can send that to. Matt continues and says he's also a big fan of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hell
which
yeah.
Made Woo-woo. Me want to bounce into, do you think that you have enough knowledge to do a Dungeons & Dragons style game themed with Star Trek? Could you do that?
Me?
That's not a question from Matt, that's a question from me.
Oh, hell yeah, I could.
Yeah, what would you do? Spare of the moment, where would you set it?
Holodeck.
Well, yes. I mean, but wow. I don't know if I need to say anything to that. We are the Holodeck Ambassador.
It's a great idea.
I'm gonna go into my imagination, to then use another imagination, mm-hmm. is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're adding an unnecessary step.
Oh, no. It's great. Because then I can play mm-hmm. D&D the way that I know how to play D&D while also being in space, because technically I'm on the holodeck.
Oh, so you would do it like how Lower Decks did it.
How did Lower Decks do it?
Oh, they played like, it was like Batlefs and something, and they're all sat around the table, and Boimler has got like the Klingon like prosthesis on, and they're all playing Dungeons and Dragons around the table, and I think Martok is like the dungeon master on the video game.
No. You go into the holodeck as your mm-hmm. character. I would have them LARP, essentially.
Just LARPing.
So like you'd be sitting, like in real life, you'd be sitting at my table, but in your imagination, they are their character. And then I either have already told them that they're technically on a starship, or I would reveal it as a secret towards, kind of like you did with your campaign.
Yes, that would be fun.
And see their eyes get big, like, what do you mean there's a sound? Whoop, 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 whoop. What is that?
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, you keep hearing that sound. And you're also hearing this. Shk.
Shk.
Shk. And you look over and there's a door that just keeps opening and closing, and there's light on the other side. And yeah, it's in the middle of the air.
Yeah, that's every episode on the holodeck ever. Shk. The door just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. So that's they can go investigate or they can stay in their fantasy. I don't know.
Oh, I love it. That's so many options. That's amazing.
They don't want to go over there and look at it. That's fine. We'll go like eat some shrooms on the holodeck.
Yeah, do it. I wonder if holographic shrooms would work. They would. I'm sure they would.
Oh no, I love they'd be real. Yeah.
Oh, you'd be putting like these ones, not the replicated ones.
Because Q is playing shrooms with them. They just don't know it yet.
Oh, Q is there. Oh mm-hmm, no. Mm-hmm.
That's my NPC.
Yeah, this is why D&D doesn't work with Star Trek. It's too broken.
I thought you were going to say with Danae, because it is also too broken when you play with Danae.
Yes, it is also too broken when you play with Danae.
Do you
it's
remember
amazing.
When we were yeah, huh? when we first became friends and you were talking to me about my D&D campaign, and yes. I was like, so I introduced time travel. You're like, what?
What did you do?
Why did you she break introduced your a, game?
Introduced a time warp where she showed bits of the future, and I'm like, you gotta keep track of that shit now.
I did too. And like, it was fucking awesome. Did. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
No, yeah, it was amazing. I love that I'm there in the game. They don't know why until the sound effects start. I'm literally just there to do the Star Trek sound effects.
Yeah.
Boop, 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 boop.
And you get to play Horta.
Oh, I'm in. I'm all the way in.
There's a carpet that appears. It's moving.
It's not a carpet. There was a man in an outfit that he made himself to get the gig.
It was a fucking rug, and you know it.
Yeah, and he nailed that rug. He. That I would have that rug in my house every day.
Oh my god!
All day. Just
people. the dirtiest looking thing.
No, but this is the beauty of it. It's actually like a Roomba rug, so it actually cleans the house.
Oh my god. How fucking smart would it be if we made like a little attachment you could add to the top of your existing Roomba to make it look like a baby Horta?
Horta, that would be a little baby Horta. Yeah. I know your mom has one of these. We need to do it.
Okay.
Or make it a triple.
But we can't.
Make it a big
we
triple.
Can't tell our audience because then you know. Okay, my mom also knows how to crochet, so we're like 95%.
This is gonna happen.
There.
I was gonna say we need. To, I thought you were gonna say we need to not tell your mom. And so she just turns up and is like, what is that? What is that on my floor?
Okay, well, that too. We can't tell my mom. That's true. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give her our idea for the Horta costume. And she's just going to be like, so you just want me to crochet a pile
yes,
of
this art,
like looking like weird looking, like a pile
Boils.
Of.
Yeah. Hernias. Hernias and
polyps.
Yeah, polyps.
Yeah,
dingleberries.
We want it to look very yeah. like that, and then a massive suction cup on the bottom. We
yes.
just sew it
yes.
ourselves.
Perfect. It's so. It's
oh
gonna
my God.
Happen.
We could also make it. We could also do one that's a triple and just have it be like a big puff ball, and you can put
yeah.
it on top. We can't tell people this is a great idea.
This is a great. We take all of this out
all
of the show.
Of
we're gonna trademark it
Fuck.
And
okay.
just get Paramount permission to license it somehow.
No, we'll have to call CBS. It. The who like the Hoover ta or like someone to change your name.
We'll just call it a Hoover. That hasn't been taken.
Oh no. Listen, we're workshopping on the fly and we need to get back to the show. Okay, go.
Matt also sent us an adorable picture of his number one. It's his little baby, and the first thing they did when they came home is watch season 3 of Star Trek. Of Picard. It's adorable. Adorableness. I don't know why I said we'd have time for two emails, because I should have known that we would be tangentifying all over the place. So the email we were going to do today, we will do the
don't say
the second
it.
Email Listen, we were going to do today, we'll do it next week.
You can't say that. You don't
know. I know we're going to do emails next week.
But you don't know which one, because there might be one that comes in that supersedes this one. If we don't cover it, then we'll cover it next week, or we'll cover it in a upcoming mailbag, because we need to do a mailbag.
Yeah, we need to do a mailbag episode at some point. We have enough now. Cool. Thanks, Matt. And
thanks, Matt.
Leaving the shuttle bay.
Give your little number one a pat for us. Little bop, little boop boop.
Okay, Ambassador. This week, we're continuing the unconventional love theme with a trip back to Deep Space Nine and looking for Pachmach in all the wrong places, which is the dumbest title in the world. It's so long. It's such a long... And I've had to Google it 17 times this week. Before we get into it, it is a follow-up to an episode in Season 3 called The House of Quark. And I've tried to succinctly put together a little synopsis of just what you need to know before we get into this episode. Just really, really, really quick. Are you ready?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm nervous. I'm nervous about this one, so go on.
These are the crucial bits you need to know. Quark accidentally kills a Klingon in a bar fight. By kill, I mean he's trying to get the Klingon to leave. The Klingon is annoyed and irritated. They get into a kerfuffle. The Klingon falls down and stabs himself.
This sounds very much like being stabbed, like when the doctor stabbed himself last week.
It's very, very similar. They get into a tussle, they roll around, Klingon stabs himself. Business is low at the bar, so Quark claims this as self-defense and says, I killed him in self-defense. It was a fantastic victory. I battled this Klingon, and people come flooding to hear the story of the Ferengi that killed. Little did he know that Kozak, who is the Klingon, is the head of a powerful family in the Klingon Empire. His brother comes along to find out how did his brother die. And Quark says, he died in honorable combat with me. And Kozak's brother is like, cool, that's great, I'm out of here, glad he died with honor. Then Kozak's wife, Kozak is the dead Klingon, his wife, Grilka, comes along and says, I don't believe you, Ferengi. There's no way that you killed my husband. Tell me now or I'm going to kill you. And he basically owns up and says, it was an accident. I didn't do it. I'm so, so sorry. She's happy, kidnaps Quark, goes back to the Klingon homeworld and marries him immediately in a really, really quick ceremony. The reason for that is that the dead Klingon's brother is trying to take over the house. And the only way he can do that is if the Klingon died in honorable victory. If he died dishonorably, then there's this special rule that means Grilka, the widow, can take over the house. They get into this argument about who wants to run the house. The brother is doing shady shit with, like, bribing people and is being dishonorable about taking over the house. Quark agrees to help Grilka expose the financial shadiness that the brother is doing, and then they get into a fight, and Grilka is very, very happy. They get a divorce, Grilka takes over the house, and Quark goes back to Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I don't think we have time to decide if it makes sense, but let me just tell you what I need to know before this episode.
Yeah.
Quark is Klingon royalty?
He technically was the leader of a powerful Klingon house for a hot minute and then got divorced.
But still probably considered royalty. And that's the whole point of what you just said.
Yeah, Quark gets married to a Klingon and then divorced and does her a favor.
And that's the most important part going into this one is that Quark is royalty.
No, it's not. It's not. You can say it again, but it's still not. Cool. Well, let's head over to the holodeck and watch the episode. We'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief. Welcome to Quarks, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your beverage of choice?
Oh, shit. Prune juice.
Blood wine.
Okay.
Yes, we did it. You can have blood wine, I'll have prune juice, vice versa, nope. Whatever. Warriors of Klingon, warriors of drinks of record. Give us a synopsis.
Oh, fuck. In today's episode of Deep Space Nine, we learn that the writers are horny and they Like, really want to explore interesting things that you know, maybe you're not used to seeing in your Star Trek. Do you want to know about love triangles? Is this the episode for you? Things that you should know before watching this episode that you were not told before watching this episode. This is before Worf and Jadzia got married. That does give us a little bit more context going into today's episode that it's not actually two love triangles happening simultaneously, but you know what it could be? We don't know. Things that also that you didn't know before this episode is you could be forked in the face, and that's love. Because that is what did the damage to Worf's face at the end, right? There was just clearly
a lot of forked face.
Yeah.
Aggressively.
Yeah, that's what you need to know about today's episode.
So I did give you some background. I explained a little bit about the House of Quark. I forgot to mention
a couple big things.
So we'll get into that in a minute.
Let me tell you what you didn't mention before watching this episode.
Yes,
what
go for
it. What you did tell me is about Quark's background, which is covered in this episode,
which I forgot that they cover that. It's amazing.
What you didn't tell me is anything about O'Brien, and you didn't tell me that this happens before Worf and Jadzia are married. So I watched almost the entire, I watched until they're battle each other and they had sex. That is when I realized that they were not actually married.
So when Worf is like lusting after Grilka and trying to seduce her,
I actually was like, Jadzia is fucking cool. Look at her. She's not even fazed by this shit.
Polygamizing. Let's do it. Fair.
We've got polygamy over here. We've got a triangle affection baby thing.
Well, that leans onto the other thing I didn't tell you about.
Didn't tell me.
To be fair, I forgot that because that B plot is completely just like superfluous, essentially. I forgot. I haven't seen this episode in a long time. So I actually rewatched House of Quark just to get caught up on that, but forgot that there's this Kira being pregnant B plot affection storyline going on. Totally forgot about that. And it just made me remember that it all fits into the unconventional love theme even better. So, audience at home, well done for picking this. It definitely ticks the unconventional love box. In so many boxes are getting ticked in this episode.
I have that in my notes. Because we went to some places today that I'm like, yes, this is the perfect unconventional love.
Yeah,
potentially
it really
unconventional.
Is.
No.
Potentially,
this
no.
is super unconventional on
super
every
unconventional.
Level. We have like interspecies going on
yes
multiple relationships. We have like a woman having other people's baby and them being attracted to each other and just realizing it and attempting to avoid having an affair. We have Worf wishing that he could be with this super badass Klingon woman while Jadzia, like, I guess was hinting the whole time. This is what's blowing my mind because I literally watched this episode thinking that they were already married. So now the whole episode shifts
for me. Yeah, that completely changes everything if you don't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I apologize. So I thought that was like, going to be obvious.
I'm kind of like, okay, so I don't know if I like her because I really liked her. I was like, man, she's so like chill.
Yeah.
Like, what a strong woman to be like, yeah.
Oh, and she would.
Of course she'd be attracted to that.
For the record, she would. I think she would be super chill with that. Like, she would be super chill with that if all cards were on the table and she was talking about it. But it's not a super Jadzia episode. She kind of takes a bit of a back seat. But before we get into specifics, overall thoughts and feelings, just what was your vibe for the episode? Did you enjoy it? And then we'll get into some specifics.
Yes, I did enjoy this episode. It was a lot.
Yeah.
This was a lot. But what I liked about this episode, again, kind of being plopped into the middle of all of these existing
The Dominion War, the pregnancy. Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Worf being dishonored. I'd forgotten about that.
So I feel like I'm at a disadvantage for sure. But I think what I liked about it was the immersion in this set. And I got to see a lot of people and I got to see a lot of places.
A lot of the space station. Yes, I did think that too.
Yeah, there was like, oh my God, I got to see Worf sing opera. I mean, this is such a good day.
There were some great moments. I was like, oh, Danae's going to love that we're getting Worf. Worf in Deep Space Nine is night and day from Worf in TNG. Like, he is so much more developed in this series. He gets a lot more screen time.
So I'm having a fun time because there's all this stuff going on. I also really think that Quark is a brilliantly interesting character. And then to have this beautiful Klingon woman and tradition and this like conflict between the Worf that could have been and then the human Worf that was kind of at play in this episode. Yeah. So no matter what was happening in front of me, there was, I was, don't get me wrong, I was very uncomfortable through many parts of this episode because I didn't know what was going to be going on. But I also sort of was like giving chops to them because they're addressing that there's a relationship that is potentially blossoming between O'Brien and Kira. Did I get her name right?
Kira, correct. Yes. And technically, you're using her surname, which is fine.
And then they're like, but we don't want to go here. When she at the end of the episode just like get out, like go. I was so happy
right now.
That's great.
Yeah, the B plot is actually, man, it's so hard because halfway through the episode, I was like, I hate this so much. Everything is uncomfortable. Everything is cringy. I don't like anything that's happening. Why in the middle of the Dominion War are we wasting our time doing this? But then the second half of the episode is so much better because you have that weird love triangle with Kira and O'Brien overlapping their feelings and trying to distinguish closeness from actual love. Then Worf and Jadzia and Quark and Grilka and the combat to death and stuff. And that's the better part for me. But to get there, the setup is so painful. It's so hard.
Yeah. So besides my kind of silly like synopsis of the episode, in this episode, Quark is essentially revisited by his ex-wife and essentially kicks off another battle, but this time he really has to battle. And
yeah, because so I didn't tell you this, but in the House of Quark, the brother of the Klingon that he kills, Grilka's widow, that brother says, "This is bullshit. I'm not going to be undone by you, Quark. I'm going to fight to the death with you." And Quark like says, "I'll do it," and then throws away his sword, as Quark says, and basically says, "You can kill me, but it will be cowardly. I'm just a Ferengi." And then Gowron steps in and saves the day. So there's a lot, and Gowron is the head of the Klingons. So there's this person there that's like, "We're not going to do this. Fuck off. You're dishonorable. It's fine."
Yeah. So that felt like, I feel like I was kind of following that part. The O'Brien stuff is confusing as fuck, but that's okay. The Jadzia stuff, I don't know what's going on. But I think they did a really good job with, like, in this episode, setting the stage for Quark. And this was clearly the Quark episode. This is
Quark
clearly
is so great. I love Quark so much.
He's so good.
He as
it's
much
so
as
fun.
Worf is to Klingons, Quark is to the Ferengi. Like, I hate to say this, but he humanized them. Like, he made them more relatable, believable, and gave them so much more depth and complexity, which is interesting because I think he's the first Ferengi that we see on screen in TNG. But in that episode, he's playing a different Ferengi and he's all like Weasley and they're all just like claws and shit. And he's just like, "I apologize. That's not what the Ferengi were meant to be. And this is what the Ferengi are." And he's the absolute highlight of this episode. He's so good.
Yeah, he was really fun. I think that what this episode is about, if I was to try to kind of tell somebody what to expect, is this is the episode where Quark really wants to date his ex-wife. What's the famous play with the guy that is really good and poetic and he feeds the lines to someone else?
Oh, Cyrano?
Yeah.
Is it Cyrano?
Maybe that's it.
Cyrano, it is. They recently made a movie with Dinklage.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cyrano.
This had that vibe going for it pretty major.
Oh,
you
it's
know?
100% a parody of that. It's I haven't done the research, but it is 100% riffing off that.
But the interesting parts here is that it's Worf wrestling with his desire to be like full Klingon, honorable, able to be with this strong woman. And instead, he's giving his best dating advice to Quark, who he does not respect. And that was an interesting kind of angle of this episode as well. And then you have Quark, who is, and I still am not quite sure what the episode is going to say about this. I'm kind of curious what you think, but does Quark really want to be with her? Or, because he does say at some point that he likes to obtain
favorite part of the episode. Yeah, valuable things.
Valuable things,
basically.
Yeah.
And it's one of the this was the cusp of the episode saving itself for me, is when Grilka and Quark have come out of the Hollow Suite and she's like, why are you doing this? And he's like, I like to obtain valuable things and I want to obtain you. And she's like, you sound like a Ferengi. And he's like, well done, lady, I fucking am. And instead of like taking that as an insult, he's like, this is me, I want you because of how you are as a Klingon and your customs and you're powerful and you're amazing. And it's in my genetics to want these things. And he's kind of just like, I'm not even going to say this is love or that this is a romantic thing, but you're incredible and I want to improve myself by having this incredible, valuable thing. And I love that so much because this story does keep Klingon love and Ferengi love and then how that mashes together. And it's just, it's so interesting because like you could use Star Trek to explore cultural things on Earth, but you've got two cultures that you've invented and then thinking, what if you mesh them together? How does that work? And that's where the episode like really sings for me.
Yeah, I feel like this episode did a lot. There was a lot going on because they had Quark and Lady Klingon
Grilka.
They had her. Then they had Dax, Jadzia, or whatever her name is, and Worf. And then they had O'Brien and his wife and his surrogate. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you have like all the in-between scenes of like O'Brien with Doctor and Kira with Odo. And so they have a lot that they're doing. And so that's probably the part I didn't like about the episode, is I feel like because there was so much going on, we almost didn't explore enough of me understanding if Quark really is interested in her, because the show is saying she came because she needed to have like help. She is having a resource situation due to this ongoing war, and she tells Quark this, and Quark is like, I can take a look at your finances for you. And she's like, okay, but that doesn't really even kind of go anywhere. Like, what did he discover?
Yeah, it's just an excuse. It's just an excuse for why she's on the space station. So she's there for these war talks that are happening between the Federation and the Klingons.
And at the end of the episode, I'm not really sure. It's like the show wanted to say, this is how we're going to get Worf and Jadzia together, rather than showing us what happens with Quark and Grilka.
Yeah.
And so that was, for me, a little bit lacking, because I was watching this incredible performance with Quark, and I'm on the edge of my seat in a way, going, does he really like her? Or is this all for show? What happens? Obviously, now they've like made it and they're going to be going to the next level or something. But then that doesn't even play out. Do we ever see them again? Like, what?
We never see Grilka again. Never mentioned again.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
It's been a while, but to my knowledge, it's not mentioned ever again. They do the thing and then she leaves to go and do whatever. You're absolutely right. The interesting thing is that this does propel the Worf and Dax relationship and storyline, and that continues onwards. But the Quark and Grilka thing, nope.
That's such a shame. That is such a shame, because this episode, to me, and I get it, like, we are going to have our favorite characters and maybe Quark isn't the one we want to focus on. But to me, he started a relationship under false pretenses. He didn't know all of the things that attracted them together. I would love to see this play out in a way where Quark is found out, or maybe she actually likes his Ferenginess. There's a hilarious speech he makes in the middle of their death battle,
it's so good.
That is so fucking funny.
The ocean, the deep ocean and the kelp of despair.
Like, I'm
talking now.
I'm watching this going, I want to see how this plays out. And she's leaning into it like, no, let's listen to his, you know, how he is. Let's understand his customs. And
so funny.
And as a brand new viewer, I'm like, is the rite of proclamation something that's real or not? I don't know.
I don't think it is. No, I think it's utter bullshit.
As it goes on, I thought it was pretty evident this is all bullshit, but I want to see this play out more. But the episode does not return. Well, I guess it returns to them because we see them fucked up in the, like, with the doctor. Like, they're all...
Yeah, we know that they get it on, but I think that's kind of... Part of me is like, that's kind of it for where the story goes. Like, the story, unless you're going to really entwine Grilka into Deep Space Nine a bit more, I think that's kind of as far as the story can go, because Quark is going to be on Deep Space Nine doing his thing. That's what happens. Grilka is going to be, she's running a really powerful house now and could eventually have a seat on the council. I think that's kind of, in terms of the show in Deep Space Nine, I think that's as far as the story needed to go with them.
I guess.
I kind of think it's perfect.
Maybe so.
I kind of think it works. What I took away from this episode is that I think The House of Quark is a better episode. I think we should watch, at some point we should watch that, but that's,
but
seeing them start off is really fun.
But because, so while Worf is listening to Quark get it on with Grilka, who he liked, he kicks off a relationship with Dax, who he didn't know he liked.
Completely oblivious that she was interested in him.
Right. So it's like she initiates this mating sequence with him, and then they choke each other out. They have kinks. It's great. Whatever. And then while they're in the recovery room, all battered and bruised and such, they're figuring out what the next steps to their relationship would be. And he says, well, you know, according to tradition, we need to get married now, which then means that would be the same for Quark and Grilka. Like, according to custom, it's go time, brother. Like, you need to come over here and rule the world with me. And it would solve potentially a lot of problems because he's great with finances.
It's true. The interesting thing is that Grilka isn't super traditional. Oh, no, she is traditional, but she shouldn't technically be running her own house. It's these special circumstances that she's taking advantage of to be the head of her own house. So I think she's okay to let the tradition of marrying go to one side. I also don't think she could get away with marrying a Ferengi. But what's interesting is Worf, like Worf in TNG would have been like, we're getting married, like end of story, this is happening. I really like seeing him in DS9 where he's more like, well, we're going to have a conversation about it now. And it shows that he's like really evolved and is finding the bits of Klingon culture that he really likes and clinging on to that. And being more flexible. Yep, heard it as I said it. And being more flexible with the stuff that makes less sense.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying. I don't have a lot of the same context because I didn't watch all of Deep Space Nine. And that it was about, like I said, this part of the episode where I was very confident that Worf and Dax had not been together yet. Like when she starts the whole fight sex sequence at the end, I was like, oh, yeah, they're super not together. This isn't a question.
Yeah,
like
this is brand new.
It started off, they are together, and then it got less and less confident. And at that point, I was 100% sure. So when he's talking about the openness to shifting traditions when they're in the recovery room, I'm then thinking about the episode I watched of them getting married and the tenseness of tradition versus flexibility, and maybe the show again playing on Worf attempting to understand his place in all of these different spaces. But it was hard to watch him suffer in this episode. Like, now that I know he
wasn't... You mean pine after Grilka?
Yeah, well, more than just pine after Grilka, like, now that I know he wasn't already happily with someone...
Right.
I started this episode genuinely thinking that they're together, and then this woman comes along, and he's just almost instinctively
drawn to a Klingon. Yeah.
Yeah. And like coming face to face with the parts of him that are not as fulfilled with Jadzia. And I was like, oh shit, this episode's going deep.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Her reaction was so fulfilling because I thought that's what was happening. Because. How great to not insert your own ego in that moment and say, yeah, you can't look at Grilka because you're with me, but instead go, well, it's pretty clear you're in love with her, man. Like, are you okay? Let's talk about it.
Man, what a different way to watch this episode. I'm so sorry.
It was a bit of a mindfuck.
I thought we mentioned it last week. That's so, yeah, that completely changes the tone.
But that was a week ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. A lot has happened since then.
But
that's really interesting.
So it wasn't just him. Now that I can look back on it more clearly and know that it wasn't what the writers were playing with, that it was specifically who he is as a Klingon, that he went to 10 forward, or whatever they call it on the space station, and
like the promenade
initiated this right to date sequence that included chucking some poor guy out of his seat,
poor Morn,
insulting her right hand man and demanding attention, and then being called to school by like old Gramps Klingon and being crushed. That is that part of Worf makes my heart hurt because that, yeah. clearly he is still wrestling with who he is in the world and his desire to be considered a true Klingon. You know, he does know tradition. He does know what a Klingon woman wants. He does want to have that same right. And because of all this other pomp and circumstance going on in this other storyline with O'Brien, we really didn't get to explore that either.
Yeah, it's this is one of the things that the networks in particular wanted to avoid with doing serialized stuff, because as a bottle episode, this barely works because there's so much context that you're missing. Like, they do a great job of making it entertaining and explaining what they need to do, but if you just jump into this episode, you don't know about the Dominion War, you don't know that Worf has been exiled from the Klingon Empire for the second time, you don't know about the Neera pregnancy, there's so much that you don't know. And it is, but you're right, that part of the episode is heartbreaking to me, because like Worf's journey, like during TNG he gets excommunicated and then he gets brought back into the Empire, and then in Deep Space Nine it happens again because he stands for what's right and refuses to back Gowron, so they kick him out of the Empire again. And for like 2 years or longer than that, he's dealing with being an outcast and a pariah while still trying to like embrace his Klingon heritage. It's yeah. like, man, the dude goes through so much.
I feel like what the writers, now again, having just watched it and kind of reflecting as we go here, but I feel like what the writers are doing now is that mating initiation sequence between Jadzia and Worf at the end is her finally saying, I like you, let's do this. Yeah. And him being like, fuck yeah, let's go. And then the potential reflective regret maybe afterwards, like maybe we shouldn't.
Everyone's horny. Don't make decisions while you're horny. Yeah.
But maybe it was also an attempt to sort of show that Worf is reconsidering his strength and who he is, and that he has a perfectly good partner right beside him, because I really enjoyed watching Jadzia be... There's the scene where they take Quark to train him, and it's like her and like she's in there just killing and battling, yeah. and she's wearing kind of like that...
The Klingon robe.
Like the little animal fur thing, and then Quark's all dressed up. I fucking love that so much. That scene might be one of my favorites.
Quark with a batleth is just absolutely priceless.
it's so good. And he's over there and he's like, I am covered in blood. There's blood in my shoes. And I loved that so much. But in that scene, you have, like, it was so fucking cool. You've got Worf sort of watching them battle and assessing their prowess. And now, upon reflection, Jadzia is just showing her stuff. Like, she's badass.
Yeah. Yeah, and great pairing.
Like how she speaks Klingon and her knowledge and her ability. Like, I was super excited about that. And she's teaching Quark, and Quark is like, this is a lot. And it was hilarious and also impressive. So by the time we get to the end, I am firmly confident that Jadzia not only knows, you know, about Worf's heritage, but that Worf mm-hmm. respects her because he's seen her in all these different circumstances. It's almost like he finally sees her. He's like, oh shit, like you are a good partner for me because you're this strong person. And having watched the marriage episode, she can stand her own against, you know, anybody without really too much fear. I mean, not very respectfully, but maybe
no. And it makes sense. It's such a clever way to use the Dax character, because one of her previous hosts, we know this from previous episodes, hung out with some really powerful Klingons like 80 to 60 years ago. So she was like embedded in Klingon culture for a long, 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 long time. So it's not just that she's somebody that's researched it. She's lived like a Klingon more than Worf has. So it's a pairing them up is a really, really, really clever pairing. Like, he has more to learn about Klingon culture from her than she does from him.
Mm-hmm. And that was fun.
Yeah.
Like the scene where, now again, upon reflection, very, very interesting. The scene where Quark comes and he's like, I need your help. I'm going to go over to her apartment tonight. And she's like, okay, so da 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 da. And Worf is just like really dealing with his jealousy. And then he's like, you're going to go in there with a big raw piece of meat and you're going to wipe the table with it. Then you're going to eat it.
We will eat.
And you're going to say these words. And it was fun. That part was fun too. Like, that's why this episode was really delightful. Let's talk about the awkwardness of the O'Brien situation though, because.
Oh my goodness.
I am super okay with not knowing everything about the story. I think I can kind of piece it together, right? Like, he and his wife can't have a baby and so they need a surrogate.
No.
Oh.
So for anybody so not just for the ambassador, but for anybody else that may not be familiar with Deep Space Nine and jumped in with us for your benefit. O'Brien and Keiko are married. There's an accident in a shuttle, I believe. They have to, like, as an emergency, transfer the baby out of Keiko and into Kira's womb.
I'm sorry. Hold on.
So she can carry the baby to term.
Hold on.
I think.
Hold on. So they're all in a shuttle together.
Yeah.
Something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Keiko's hurt.
Yeah.
Her womb specifically not going to be womby much longer.
Yes.
She's going to live. Womby won't live. And there is a... How far along? Do you remember how far along?
I can't remember. I think it's months. Like, it's not like immediate beam the baby into Kira, she explodes. Like, it's still quite small. But yeah, they definitely perform a baby transplant and put the baby into Kira.
That's not how that works. That's not how that fucking works.
Hey, it's the 24th century. Of course that's how it works. You just beam that baby in and out.
But
it's pretty early on in the pregnancy, yeah.
The womb is a whole, like, that's a whole, like, space. It's not like you can just take a baby and then just, like, it's already attached itself.
To another species, no less.
Into another
Kira isn't human.
Being.
Into an alien. Anyway, they figure out a way to make it work, mainly because the actor that plays Kira, Nanar Visitor, was pregnant. And they wanted a natural and organic way to explain her pregnancy without tying her to somebody in particular. So they gave her the O'Brien's baby. So now they live together in this, like, throuple thing where they're looking after the Kira until she has the baby. But it's essentially a surrogate situation, yes. That's the bottleness of that. And I always found it a little bit odd that they fall in love in this episode and then never mention it again. I'm like, that's a really interesting arc and I can see it happening, but it's almost too playful. I kind of, like, want them to do the grown-up thing and explore it and talk about it. Because, like, all this episode teaches you to do is to bury the emotions. And it's like, that doesn't mean you don't love Keiko. It's just something you should perhaps talk about.
No.
I don't know. Bury that shit deep. But one of my favorite bits of the episode is when Kira is describing the cottage. It's like, it gets worse. There's a view of the lake. Just describing the
river
romantic.
From every window.
Yes.
There's two balconies.
Uh-huh. There's a hot tub. Yep. You're not allowed in unless you're actually in the process of making love. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. So what we have here is a situation where O'Brien is, they're all living together now. I'm presuming because as Kira is progressing in pregnancy, they're very invested and they all want to be together as a group.
Correct. Yeah. They want to be a part of the pregnancy. Yeah.
And so there's a closeness there. There's a caring for each other there. There's a community vibe going on. And then O'Brien and Kira sort of realize that they have a deeper connection and it freaks them out. Mm-hmm. And they both are trying to take a step away from that without causing weirdness. Here's my question.
Correct. Yes.
Do they keep the storyline going of this awkward...
I don't think they do. Okay, I'm good. Pretty sure it's been a while, but I think they kill it here.
Good.
I think because I'm pretty sure she gives birth either like the next episode or in a couple of episodes. Like it's pretty soon
this
after.
This was her maternity leave episode. This was when she's like, bye everybody. Yeah. I'm gonna be back with a baby.
Peace out.
Yeah. Bye. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad. Honestly, I'm glad because it wasn't. Listen, people get attracted to other people and that's life. Like, and I'm super excited to see anybody try to explore the complexity of that. I like how they handled it in this, where it's like, we're not exploring this. There's so much going on right now. We're not starting a relationship. We're just going to be saying, cool, we have something in common. We're moving on. Yeah. I actually really, really liked that. And again, my favorite was when she's like, get out.
Get out, Miles. Go.
Let me be clear. Because it was over. They're like, yep, yeah. We've avoided awkwardness. And he's like, but wouldn't it have been cool? And I'm like, Jesus, O'Brien.
Stop it, O'Brien. Stop being horny
fucking
for 2 minutes.
Bean yourself out of there, man. Get out.
I do love, like, Odo is used beautifully in this episode. Like, when he gets a chance to be cheeky and kind of, oh, so it's Miles now. And just how expressive he's able to be with that plastic face on.
Yeah.
And yet he's still so expressive. He goes from angry to kind of that patronizing smile. He's, when they let him be playful and sarcastic, it's so, so fun.
Yeah. That, again, I think is why I like this episode, even though it did a lot and it maybe didn't sit inside of the story elements I was more curious about. It's a very filled out world. This isn't an episode where we have a crew of six that we're watching with some extras in the background. This is an entire space station, multiple levels, you know, different kinds of things going on. And
it's not just Starfleet as well. There's like civilians and the Bajorans, and Odo isn't even in Starfleet.
And I don't quite understand all of that. I don't need to entirely, but I do like dipping back into that world. And what a strange episode to do. But it was definitely unconventional love. I loved
you have
a man who is tending to the needs of the woman carrying his child by giving massage and wrestling with emotions. You have her also wrestling with emotions, but still wanting to do her job. You have the wife that's delightfully oblivious and wanting to make sure that her child is cared for. All of that, very unconventional, very loving. Mm-hmm. And then you have all of the ways that the Worf, Jadzia, Godzilla, and Quark person, no, Grilza.
Grilka.
Yep. I totally was about to get there on my own.
Yeah, I believe you.
Grilzilla.
Grizzled. Godzilla? Yes, Godzilla is in this episode.
That was very unconventional, and I thought this was perfect. This was really, really great.
Interesting. Yeah, it's I'm over the moon that you enjoyed it. I was almost dreading this review.
It was uncomfortable.
The first half of the episode, because it's like, it's so uncomfortable, because you have like Worf lusting and being massively racist toward Quark. You have like arguments with O'Brien and Kira and Bashir being a bit creepy, and there's like just lots of fluff that happens. But when you get to the meat and potatoes of it, like the second half of the episode, I'm like, damn it, they're actually doing some really interesting things here about intercultural relationships and how those traditions mesh, and just how many different types of relationships you can have. Like Odo sums it up really well. He says, well, what family member are you? Sister, daughter, cousin? Like, you're saying family member, but what type of love are you nailing down right now? Which
and
is
that's okay.
Kind of the crux of the episode.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting that it forced her to kind of go, I'm not really trying to figure that out. And they didn't go there, where she's not trying to start a relationship with O'Brien or, you know. But at the same time, I started this episode thinking that they were all in a mutual relationship.
Yes.
That's what I thought, because I'm dropped into the middle of nowhere.
Changed things so much.
So
the next series of Star Trek needs a thruple.
I thought we had two thruple stories going on.
Yes. Going on at once.
I thought we had
Incredible.
The start of a thruple request from Worf as he wrestled with wanting to be with a full-on Klingon woman. And then I thought I had an existing thruple where we start the episode with, you know, Dr. Dude eavesdropping, and I thought that it was like the thruple's having trouble, because so we're going to work it out.
Yeah, trouble and thruple them.
But then I was like, oh, no, this is a surrogacy situation. And they're just surprised by their emotions too, because it reveals itself. So it's always kind of interesting to drop into the middle of something without a lot of context. Yeah. I highly recommend it. I'm kind of glad you didn't tell me, because it really made it an interesting.
I should just not give you any precursors ever again. Just let you just go into the episode, and what will be will be. That's it. Yeah, it's fascinating. Overall, I ended up liking this a lot more as well. Any other points before we do some pipping and then into some scenes?
I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the epic battles of this one.
Oh, of course. And the VR headset thing, virtual
very
fighter.
Sinful. I'm ready to talk about that in the sins, but
yeah.
The crux of this story really comes down to Quark is going to die by the hands of a warrior Klingon. And so, Worf decides to hook himself up through this remote device and essentially be able to take over Quark's body.
Yep.
I don't know if it's his, it's not his mind and his word. That's just his body, because Quark is able to talk just for himself.
Just his body. Yeah.
Results in a hilarious scene at the end.
So hilarious.
It was so funny.
I guess I'm going to
pick up
kneel
the sword now.
And pick up your sword.
Hand it to you.
And give it to you. It's so funny. So he plays that off so well.
But the funny thing for me about that scene as well, like the whole battle thing, is that it reminded me of the battle in TOS, this highly telegraphed, super slow, entirely awkward.
Oh, the bar fight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of those where if we ever do a series on fights, or if anyone's trying to keep track of, I'm going to show my friend a whole bunch of weird fight ones, please put this one in there. Make him watch Awkward Love and an awkward fight.
Yep.
Because that was really, it was super telegraphed, so slow. But we had seen it. We'd seen many different kinds of fights. There was the Worf-controlled fight at the end, which is the, you know, the stakes are high, people could die kind of fight. But then there was all the fighting that was happening in the holographical place.
It's the holo suite on Deep Space Nine.
That makes it sound even more sticky.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, Quark is selling sex dungeons. Yeah.
Why?
100%. It's Pleasure Dome.
Why is it called a suite?
Because they're bigger. It's branding. It's the most Ferengi thing you could do. They're holosuites. Holodeck sounds really military. He changes the name to holosuite.
Okay.
Because you would think size wouldn't matter, but it does on a holodeck suite.
Okay. I got it. I would think a deck would be bigger, but decks come in all sizes, so.
Fair. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. The you're right with the battle, and this was, it's only something I've realized as I've watched Star Trek in my adult years, is how slow the battle fights are. It's just this slow swing,
king,
defend,
king,
swing, and king, block, and turn. King. However, I will take that over 1,000 cuts a minute every day. Like, I buy the believability of this unique way of fighting that's much more about power. Like, there is technique, but it is about brute force, and we assume that, like, with like martial arts and stuff, it's speed and it's blocks and it's all of that. It's 1,000 cuts a second, which looks impressive if you can do it right, but most movies don't do it right because they cut too much. Mm-hmm. But with Klingons, it's much more about raw body power and where you put that stuff. And yes, the moves might be more telegraphed, but they absolutely pack a hit. Like, you break through someone's defenses. Quark should be dead. Because although he has Worf's technique, he's still a weak little Ferengi.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the episode tries to say that you're making, like, you almost pull my arm out. Like, he can kind of push his brute force through what his body is able to do. The other thing that I was just thinking about was when they were on the holodeck and he misses, like, Quark misses, and he almost gets hit by the his opponent, and then Jadzia is like, Quark, you gotta go, and it was just, we got to kind of see how you're supposed to use this weapon, and then we get to see, like, the kind of clever cuts back and forth when Worf takes over Quark's body, and he's, like, just casually flipping this bat lift, but Quark is selling it, the actor is just selling it. It's
he
so
really,
fun
his
to watch.
Arms look disconnected from his face and the rest of his body. Yeah. It's like, that's Worf doing it. And I think it's the eye contact, because Worf is, like, really focused. And Quark's just like, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. Let's go.
Yes, exactly. It was delightful.
So fun.
I really, really enjoyed the fighting. And you're right. It is slower and potentially more intentional because of design of how the Klingons fight. I, as you, far more used to these fast-paced martial arts John Wick shit that we see. But this is...
And John Wick is one of the better examples. Like, I'm more thinking like Marvel. Whenever, to hide the fact that you have these actors doing everything, they hide it with all of the cuts and whatnot.
Yeah.
Which is
But it was really delightful to kind of watch and go, wow, okay, how do you get into... It's sort of like storytelling has changed. If you have a fast-paced battle, your adrenaline is going because you're watching the series, and it's almost like you can't stop and think. But the storytelling and the cleverness of a slower battle you think more about it. You have time to kind of stop and watch and see how they're standing or their expressions when they're just face to face with each other.
Yeah.
And I know we're watching something where you've got these actors who they really can't be doing much more than what they're doing on scene. Like, no. These are not trained professional.
I think Michael
acrobats.
Dorn does an incredible job whenever he handles
but
a bat lift.
That's what I'm saying is
he is musical.
Watching Worf telegraphed in the adjacent room made my heart sing. I was so happy. I got to see my Worf.
Yeah, you did.
My beloved character in a different space. I'm not used to seeing him on Deep Space Nine, so that was fun in and of itself.
In a red uniform.
He's in a red uniform. He's fighting. He's hanging out with new people. He's wrestling with his past. He's attracted to a woman, and he's singing opera. Like, this was a great episode.
Yeah.
I loved this episode.
Oh, I'm so glad. I really, I didn't have, I had reserved expectations about how you would feel about it. But yeah, I think we agree. The back half saves the front half. I'm glad you had a good time. For me, overall, I was ready to give this like a 2 pips, but I think it's a 3. I think it deserves 3 pips for the complexity of the different relationships it's trying to show, the humor and the drama that comes with it. It's a weird one. You could throw away this episode, but I actually think it's kind of good now. That's so weird. I've been on a journey today.
Let me just
say
this.
I'm not ready to like this.
While watching the episode, it was very awkward because I did not know where they were going to go. By the end of the episode, I liked where it landed. It felt like it was, I liked that they didn't push the O'Brien Kira thing, and I like that.
Oh, could you imagine if there'd been a kiss? It would have changed.
Oh, I would have hated
everything.
It.
Yeah,
it would
have
hated
been,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because at that point, it's really clear that you're starting up an actual affair, which is different than having a open conversation about
love.
They're very, very different.
Yeah, totally different.
So then. You also have like the beginning of Jadzia and Worf and this wrestle with tradition versus who I really am. Like, I can't be traditional. I'm not allowed to be traditional. I'm not even welcome in my tradition. So I have to be non-traditional. So that's a really interesting kind of thought. And then of course, and Quark. This is such a fun Quark episode because he is wanting to acquire something that is very dangerous. And I think the only reason I'm going to go 3.5 ish pips instead of 4 is because I think that the show did a disservice by not showing us what happens with them next. So knowing that this doesn't go anywhere pisses me off because how fun would it be if there was a way for her to take Quark back and like have this master.
Oh my goodness.
Like that sounds like a great thing.
It would be great. And I actually kind of agree. And I think you'll find this when we do more Quark episodes. The Ferengi episode, some people throw them away, but I think they are incredible. There are some really, really good ones. Armin Shimerman is just a gift to Deep Space Nine. It's such a strong cast. It's so good.
I didn't do any predictions this episode, and I'm glad I didn't because I had nothing in my brain. When you told me about like, okay, here's the backstory heading into this one, it's like it cleared everything out of my head.
Just vaporized.
I was like, well, I guess I know Quark's going to be in this episode, so I really didn't have any predictions on this one. But there's no way that I could have. Maybe I.
Oh no.
I don't think I could have predicted
Klingon sex. I think you would have predicted Klingon sex.
Yeah, I see someone's face being scratched by 3 marks. Like, that would have freaked you out.
Yeah, you would have absolutely done it. You see crimping, hair crimping is what you'd see.
Oh my God, and I got to see Worf's hair down.
Half
down, half up. Like, oh my God.
Were you just
so
ready
sexy.
To pounce on him yourself? Yeah.
So sexy. Oh my God.
Michael Dorn is quite a man. That's amazing. Okay, with that, let's head over to engineering for some sins. Battle stations, everyone, red alert.
Warning, warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, you can go first.
Oh, thank you. I think I'm about to answer my own question. I've had enough time to process this sin that I might be undoing
it. Interesting.
So many sins in it though, so let's explore. Worf taking over Quark's body. This is such crazy bullshit, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean.
Okay, but hold on. Let me explain.
Go on.
Could Worf see? Because he was on a holodeck, so he had this thing on his shoulders. But did that mean that he could see what was going on?
Yeah, I think the little nubs on the top were projecting were projecting his opponent.
Okay.
Because we don't see the projection next door. So I'm assuming it's all to do with that VR headset, essentially. Okay. It has to be.
Because we're left to assume that, though. There wasn't a moment...
Yeah, we never prove that Worf sees his opponent, no.
Because that's the thing that bothered me the most, is this could... There's no way that this works if he can't see his opponent and he's just...
Of course. Of course. There has to be a way.
Like, throw on some sort of CG that doesn't make his eyes zappy or, like, we...
Yeah. Like the game. When, like, they do the game and the thing projects. Yeah. It's basically a reverse headset from the game. So, I can kind of buy it. We have VR headsets. Like, this is just... And we have, like, brain muscle neural interfaces that are on the cusp now, where people can control a prosthetic arm using their brain. So I get that in 300 years, that technology or a species out there has also developed the technology. This may not be Federation technology, but there's something out there that can let you do that. It's such a specific application, though. Like, it's so specific. What else would you use this for?
There's even just a slight moment where when the device clicks on that he rubs his eyes and then he's like, he nods, just some kind of an acknowledgement that this is also something he can see, because they're not allowed in the room. So when I realized that they were in a holodeck, or I think that they were in a holodeck themselves.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, because that's one of my sins.
I then thought, oh, maybe somehow the adjacent room is being conveyed into their room, and so they're seeing the opponents in this sort of like,
yeah.
It was very confusing.
It wouldn't have been too hard. I guess it would. Budget things are hard to work out, but it wouldn't have been hard to like replicate everything in that room into the room that Worf and Jadzia are in. So they're interacting with everything in real time. So they can see everything, but as projections.
Yeah.
But then you'd need like the physicality for Worf to fight against as well. Like, that's what I would see, is the Worf, when he connects with, when Quark connects with the other guy, Worf can't feel that physical connection.
How does he know
unless
how to stop?
He can? Yeah, how does he know when to stop? And how does that not throw them out of sync? Like, what should have happened is that Quark's elbows should have been separated from his forearms after the first impact, when Worf carried on and Quark couldn't. Like, bone just snapped out of his skin.
And then why have this device be so flimsy that he can just brush it with a
skip
and just the nubbin pops off?
He just flicks it, like, stop showing off. It's like, I'm not showing off. It was so funny.
I don't know. That was very
yeah, there's a lot to answer there.
Yeah.
Mine was, while we're on the holodeck situation, mine's such a silly one, but it always bugs me. The holodeck door, when Quark comes in, does a and it has the Federation sound effect for the door opening. This is a Cardassian space station. Like, there's the replicator makes a different noise, the comm panels make a different noise, the computer has a different voice. They go to so much effort to make this a Cardassian station. I have to sin it when you accidentally leave a Starfleet sound effect in there. These doors should sound different.
Wow.
Yep. Go on, I know you've got it somewhere.
No, that's a totally legit sin. Because doors can't make different sounds. Or they have to make different sounds.
They have to.
Yeah.
Your turn, Ambassador.
There's no way Worf didn't hear Quark coming in, speaking of door sounds. Well, he's in there singing his heart out. He's got his music blaring, but it's
how
in
you
that...
underestimate how loud Klingons play opera?
Well, yeah, but he's in that room and he's like, it goes in like a down moment. There's a downbeat. There's like a moment. If I could hear it, he could hear it. He's a fucking Klingon warrior. And I think he's probably a proud one, too. And might not want people to know that he sings opera. I don't know.
Oh, I think he sings that with pride. I don't think he cares. Like, okay. He didn't seem embarrassed at all.
He was great. My literal notes in that section was, opera, yes, Worf is singing. Oh, my God, my day is complete. I am so happy.
He does, like, the high bit, and then he goes low. It's so good, Melota. So good. What was my other one? Okay, this is Quark, and Grilka is complaining about how bad the war has been for her house and how she's lost land and soldiers. Mm-hmm. And Quark just stares directly at the camera and says, "War, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing, if you ask me." I'm like, what did you just do? Like, imagine that would never happen in TNG. And it's just like, you can tell that this is the Star Trek writers being playful, taking themselves less seriously. I was like, you
Ron
just quoted Edwin Starr.
Right? Like, he is passed on at this point.
He's gone by this point, and it's so obvious.
It's so, yeah. So I was thinking that because when that happened, I thought, oh, dear. I looked over, and you were just like furiously writing a sin, and I was like, oh, yeah, that pissed him off. But also,
he knows
there's
what
just
he's
so
doing.
Much like innuendo sex chat here. So again, the writers are just, they're having fun on this one.
It's really interesting. It's really fun. And it's not the only time that Quark will do this as well. The most mind-bending one is when, in a later episode that I don't know that we'll ever watch, he takes a quote from Picard. He does the "this line no further" speech, but he does it based on like workers' rights, because he doesn't want to give his employees like any rights. And he's like, if we start here, then this is what happens, and then this is what happens, and it's the end of Ferengi civilization. The line must be drawn here, this far, no further. I'm like,
oh,
you can't
God.
Know that he said that.
Oh no.
But it's beautiful. It's so good at the same time.
Wow.
But
I mean,
I would
sin
the heck out of that. It's fun, but I'd sin it.
I'm gonna sin that there was nothing to come from Quark knowing about the financial records of this. Like, there is no way he wouldn't exploit that. In fact, I was a little disappointed because he gives this look whenever he gets access to her records at the beginning. He's asking, are you here for business or pleasure? And then he offers some of the financial records. She says, if it pleases you. And I was thinking, they know something about each other here. And she knows that coming here, she was going to be able to get help from Quark. And Quark has now been given access to this stuff. And he is so happy. Like,
honestly,
has this little look in his face, like, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be really fun. But then it turns into a sex episode, which is great. That's fine.
It comes down to. I think his boner is happy. I think he's like, oh, she's let it. I can prove myself. Oh, okay. I'm in with a chance. Like, so you're saying there's a chance is basically.
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, he's basically said, can I buy you a drink? And she said, yeah, you can buy me a drink and maybe dinner. Like, that's the equivalent for a Ferengi. He's offering to do her financial books. That's big for a Ferengi.
That's big.
Like, that's
he was
love
super
language.
Happy.
Literally,
you know,
their love language is
it.
Money.
Like, he's going to. He does say that she's worth all the latinum in the world, though, and that's really sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's very sweet. That's about the nicest thing a Ferengi can say to you.
Probably so.
My next one was poor Morn. So, Morn is the alien that sat at the bar, and he's one of the best characters in Deep Space Nine. He's always at the bar, he's usually got like a beautiful woman on his arm. There's a running gag that he's always talking, although we never hear him say a line. He's just the bar staple that's always there. And then Worf just yeets him out of his seat.
What did he says right before he does it, too. He's like,
I'll apologize for this later. Yeah. And just throws him off the seat. It's so bad. This is my chair. It's like, no, it's not. That's Morn's chair. Morn is always there. So that's just. And this is like, he's a commander. He is high up on the station. Like, you are in uniform, Worf. At least wear your civvies and then do it. Like, somebody from Starfleet just attacked a civilian in a public place.
No one does anything either.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, no one does.
It's amazing.
Chad is saying that Morm is Norm from Cheers.
Yeah, it was meant to be a play on the character from Cheers. Yeah.
Okay. That's cute. That's
it's fun. Really clever. Really, really fun.
I am going to send Ian on this episode of Captain's Pod because the first time that I'm trying to clue in to like so put yourself in my shoes.
Okay.
O'Brien goes to the doctor for herbs or something. And the doctor's giving him shit about fighting and he's saying something about, I don't know who Kira is. I don't know who Keiko is. I just know O'Brien. And so they're talking about Kira and Keiko. And there's some kind of insinuation that O'Brien's testing her meds. And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? And then all of a sudden, O'Brien shifts to, I saw a rash on the back of the thighs helping her out of the tub. And then the doctor is like, did you look? Did you look? Did you see somewhat you like? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And then there's like, how does Keiko feel about helping Kira out of the tub? And I'm literally so
confused. You're so lost.
On this relationship. And I'm like, is this just like a super mature throuple going on? And the doctor's like, Keiko and Kira, but you know, you looked, you definitely looked. And I wrote this in my notes in all caps. What the fuck am I watching? And why didn't Ian give me any backstory to the situation? This is the love story that I want to know about. And that is again, just a nice little sin on you. A little sin
on
you.
Totally fair. Totally fair. However, I did not remember that B plot. I remember that this is Dax and Worf getting together. I remember Grilka and Quark. I remember the Kira and O'Brien thing happening, but I did not know it was in this episode. Totally forgot about that. So yeah, I apologize. That was some crucial context that you probably would have needed and then forgotten about.
But then we'll just go ahead and send me, because my notes on Morn or whatever his name is.
Morn. Yeah.
Is, quote, the mud guy licks his lips and wants more to drink.
Yes.
I called him the mud guy.
That's racist. Come on, the mud guy.
He looked
That's
like,
just
he
his
looked
complexion.
Like a, no, he looked very clay-like.
Like a rock. Yeah. He's got a very rubber face. Yeah. He's an interesting character. I love Morn. He's so funny.
I think this is my last sin, was the moment when Keiko comes in to the massaging situation with Kira's clothing and holds up
heeled
boots and says, I added some insoles, or someone did, and that means
tailor.
They're better.
Yeah, there is. You know what makes them better? Remove the heels.
There is nothing that makes a heel better. Now,
yeah, I don't care how good that insole is.
She's a different species. So elastin might not
maybe
be
her feet,
a thing.
Maybe her feet actually are shaped like that. That's why.
It could be.
Yeah,
yeah,
that makes
she
sense.
Could have a different shape. Or so like... in a human's body, you know, a biological female body, when you're pregnant, you're flooded with elastin. It all of a sudden makes you stretchier, which is why they say to be very careful with working out and wearing high heel shoes and stretching. This is why the quote unquote feet grow during pregnancy. It's actually that the elastin, the relaxin that floods your body. It's relaxin, not elastin, but the relaxin impacts the, anyway, it makes you stretchy.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have, I mean, heels alone, I would sin, and that would be the standing sin, because I don't know about the Bajoran chemical makeup. Bajoran? Mm-hmm. Did I get it right?
Yep. Yeah, you nailed it.
So I can't necessarily do that because I don't know anything about that, but I do know that I'll sin a heel. I will always sin a heel.
Good. I completely agree with you. It's crazy. It's bizarre. Never liked him. This is my last sin. O'Brien just sampling things he shouldn't sample. Like, he gets like the sleep mask that's supposed to cure sneezing. What does he do? He takes a big drag on that thing. I'm like, you don't know what that does to humans. Like, stop it.
Also, why are
stop
we
it?
Curing
why?
Sneezing?
Well, it's like, it's their version of morning sickness. So it's keeping her up at night. Like, she is sneezing pathologically, like unstoppable sneezing. So yeah, it's to negate that. But O'Brien quit it, and I just think it's the whole I bet you looked thing for an episode that's kind of progressive about a lot of stuff. That felt a little bit like childish. Like, I bet you looked when she got out of the tub. I bet you looked. You know, I bet you looked. I was like, boys, stop it.
And that's the weird thing too. It's like, he's a doctor. Shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
He's acting like, biologically, it's fun to look. It's like, yeah, a doctor has seen everything.
What does that say about you, Bashir?
Yeah. Is that his name?
Are you looking? Yeah, Dr. Bashir. Are you looking inappropriately?
I feel like something has happened, and I want to tell you about it. I think it's important. All of the anger that I have experienced for Jadzia has shifted to Bashir.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really understand. Especially the first, I think, 3 seasons of Bashir almost makes me not want to watch Deep Space Nine.
He literally,
because he's such a creep.
He starts off by listening in the doorways, and then he's like egging on his best friend to look at another woman's in her sacred space. Like, she's bathing, she's feeling comfortable, and it's like, go ahead and look, as if a doctor hasn't seen it all. Like, I used to be a full-time massage therapist. That was my career, and one of the things that always was a potential topic of conversation and happened with clients many times is their comfortability with being naked. And so when that conversation would happen, or when we would talk about the comfortability of whatever level you wanted to derobe to experience your massage, I was very adamant, like, this is just, I'm a professional. It's just tissue. I am working on your tissue. So like a doctor, any doctor that sort of breaks into, or any professional that breaks that, for me, it
feels weird.
Because it happens in real life all the time. Like, there's just predatorial assholes, but he's definitely giving that vibe.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. And I get it's like they're buddies, they're best friends, they have a Geordie Data relationship eventually. So I guess there's that element to it. But it's creep factor. Super duper creepy.
I hate him.
Any other sins before we go and announce next week's episode?
No, I don't think I have anything else. I think we need to end on the bad guy, Bashir.
Yeah.
What a dick.
Screw Bashir. He gets better. He does get better, but that's a low bar.
Listen, we can't keep doing this where you show me something entirely inappropriate and then you're like, no, but he's actually okay. And we're going to...
I'm showing both sides. He genuinely is. Like, he is an interesting character. He has not done well in the first few seasons.
Nah.
For sure.
What a dick. For sure.
What a dick. Okay, well, interestingly, I guess the most important question that everyone's going to be thinking, and I don't know if we can actually answer it based on this episode, I get the impression you're warming to Jadzia. What are your thoughts on her? How has that evolved? Not that, like I said, I don't think this episode gives you much to work on.
Yeah, this, I was very nervous watching Jadzia. Like I said, I really liked her character when I thought that they were already together. And then as that changed, I kind of see her more in like this. I don't know. She's obviously very powerful and she's very knowledgeable and she speaks Klingon like a star. And she clearly wants Worf. And in his most vulnerable moment, she goes after him. I don't know if I respect that.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. But also Klingons.
Yeah.
Different standards.
Has a choice. It's not like he doesn't have it. He has a choice.
He can absolutely say no.
He could have said no. He could have said, you're saying these words, but do you know what it means? Instead, it seems like in the heat and the battle of the moment. But like, he's in his most vulnerable sort of like, he's in love with God Grilza and Quark, you know, he's like taking his best knowledge in even his power and his battle, and he's using it to get the lady she wants. And then Jadzia's like, I got your boots, baby. Let me distract you. And at the end of the episode, he's just like, ha, 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 you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Your sex definitely distracted me from my pain. And then the show ends. I like Jadzia? Like I've always said, I am not opposed to liking a character. I'm just going to go off of what I've seen. This definitely warmed me to her character. And I am not opposed to watching more Jadzia. Bashir can kiss my ass.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go out there.
So
airlock.
Now our beloved audience can be upset that I don't like another beloved character, and you can send in your frustrations about that.
I think they'll absolutely support you on the Bashir front. Okay, everyone, we're going to have one more episode in our unconventional love series because I'm so excited to get into the time travel stuff. You've already all sent in some incredible time travel episodes. There is one clear winner so far,
and it's a salamander episode
behind it. It's not that, fortunately. There is no time travel technically in that one, so one more unconventional love episode and then some time travel. Next week we are going to be, much as we started, we will be finishing with a Q episode, and this is Cupid from TNG.
Cupid rhymes with stupid.
So this is season 4 episode 20, Cupid. So we're starting with Q inspiring some love. We are ending with Q inspiring some love.
I don't know. I don't know.
No, save it. Save it for next week. Save it for next week. And yes, this is technically a follow-up to a different episode of TNG, but I'll explain all of that next week.
Are you going to explain what? The parts that matter or the parts that don't matter that the episode's going to explain?
The bits that don't matter at all. Explain something completely irrelevant that doesn't matter. Until next week, hey, you can get in touch with us. Go to Twitter/X at CaptainsPodCS. Send us an email, CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com. Join the Discord, the CinemaSins Discord, which has a Star Trek channel on it to interact with all of us and have a jolly good time. It's discord.gg/CinemaSins. Keep sending your time travel episodes. You guys are the best. I'm Captain Ian, and I'm off to find some Kelp of Discontent.
That's the one that I was going to say.
Yes!
Okay.
Just apologize for this later.
God damn it. I should have known that you're going to pick the kelp one. And as I'm surrounded by corpses and shoes dripping in blood, this is romantic from me.
Amazing. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Oh, Danae, it's time for Captain's Pod. I know, calendar. I fucking know!
Sure, I told you to remind me many times so that I wouldn't be late. But now you can be quiet, because I'm here. Hello? Can you hear me? Wait, can... You don't even have your... Okay, shit. Your headphones aren't even... You're walking away! Deep Space Nine, looking for deep. What's the title of the show today? Deep Space, looking for Parmok in all the wrong places! Exclamation points. That doesn't tell me what season it is. What season is it? What?
Winter, I think.
Wow.
Are you laughing so hard? You're gonna choke on your food. There are not any exclamation points in the title of this one, and then there's exclamation points in the title of it on Captain's Pod Live Star Trek Deep Space Nine looking for Parmok in all the wrong places. Also, Parmok is capitalized on the show title, but it's not capitalized in our title. So clearly we got some strange... And the M is capitalized on ours, but it's not capitalized on theirs. And the N is also capitalized on theirs, but not in ours.
Well, on mine, it's completely different to what you just said. The P and the M are capitalized, but the N isn't. But
on Paramount Plus?
I'm on Netflix because streaming is weird internationally. But yeah, the correct Klingon is small P, capital M. Pahmah.
Nerd! I have a new game I'm playing. I think I tried to tell you about it, but you're busy. You know, and to tell you about it right now, since we're obviously not talking about anything specific before the show, it's this... No, I did. I told you the title of it because I had to look it up. Did you?
Yeah,
did
like
you...
the cat puzzle game.
The Divine Co? Did you?
No,
did
I
you...
haven't. What's it called again? Divine
what the
Co?
DIVINEKO. Whatever! We played Lost Ark together last year for a little bit to test it out. And that's an example of a game that just gives you everything all at once and barely any explanation.
And then just when you think, like, we were like 60 hours into the game, and it introduces this entire new way of playing and this complete other layer. Like, this game has hundreds of hours. It's so dense and complex. And then I fucked it up.
You did fuck it up, but let's not talk about that. Well, podcast listener, if Ian has chosen to include this particular part, you can email us to find out more information. How did Ian fuck it up at cinemasins.com?
you got to make that email address now.
Shit.
You got to do it. Tie it into the captain's pod.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going to include it now so that you have to do some work.
I'm just wondering, should I have the email sent to me so I can answer the question, or should I have it sent to you?
Oh, I'd much rather it was sent to you.
So I'm going to send it to you then. Okay, great.
Great, great, good. Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to know some of the ones that Aaron has?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Is this what we want to spend our time on?
Do it.
Okay. He has Pixar Didn't Happen, email names, merch ideas. That should actually go to me. Fascinating. Your porn story.
Oh, no. What?
Dick pick, which is D-I-K.
The D's. Yeah, I remember that.
And how stairs work.
Captain Spot, Stardate 12-22-34.1. Welcome aboard the Starship. Why was that so funny?
It just sounded... Now that I know what Kirk sounds like, that sounded even funnier.
Captain Spot, Stardate 12-22.
Oh, see, but now you're like really emphasizing
it. Oh, okay. Too much? Okay, too much
Before
Kirk.
Before it was... Was it natural or was
that was
that
natural.
Purpose?
That was my natural delivery. Jesus. I wasn't trying to do Kirk. Damn it. Unique New York. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings from the ships.
Okay, so we've got some questions, some first updates on dogs, cats, or fish. Oh my God, like what a journey we're on. Because I have had dogs, cat, and fish situations.
Really? All this week?
No, I mean on this show,
general.
We've talked
yes.
about all of those. If someone was to watch the show for the first time, they would think I have a problem with animals, and then I'm like, wait, do
I? You do have a problem with animals. You stole a dog, you killed a fish, and you're stealing a cat. I do not believe that kids are one when they start walking. One? That's like, do you know how young that is? That's like 12 months old. It's barely a year. It's so little.
Okay, I could tell you the day that Iris took her first steps if you give me a minute.
Where have they got to walk to? Where have they got to be?
That is not what it's about. Moopsie versus Quark being controlled by Worf. Oh, shit.
That's a win-win because Worf's just like, either way, I'm safe.
I think it's probably Moopsie.
Moopsie, because Moopsie just goes for the ears immediately. Yeah. And then Quark is just squealing.
Heck. Check. What is wrong with me? There are some people that should not have a professional grade microphone, and I think I'm one of them.